We get things underway this afternoon by welcoming to the program an author whose previous work is Ensemble, an oral history of Chicago theater. He's been working for some time on a biography of our friend, the late Ed Asner, who passed away a little over a week ago. And we're pleased to be joined this afternoon by Mark Larson. Mark, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me, and happy anniversary.
Thank you very much. You know, we were pretty devastated here at the loss of Ed. He'd been on our show a number of times, but we didn't get to know him anywhere near as well as you did. How long have you been working on this biography of Ed?
I started the biography just at the beginning of the pandemic, actually. I was actually booked to fly out. I had an Airbnb set, all set to go, and, you know, like for so many people, the pandemic smothered that plan. So mostly we did it by phone and Zoom for the past year and a half. But I had actually, going back to Ensemble, I had met him in 2015 and had a number of encounters with him between then and my proposing the book.
Well, the phrase is I think, overused, but it certainly applies in our dealings with Ed. He was one of those people who was certainly larger than life.
He certainly was. You know, it's funny you said that because that kept coming to my mind, too. I just had to write an article for Chicago Paper here, and I kept fighting the urge to say it, but it's so very true. You're absolutely right.
And he had that gruff exterior, and he knew how to use that professionally and sometimes personally as well, but there was, at least in dealing with colleagues, there was a big teddy bear under all of that.
Yep. He was. One of the things I wrote in the article was that Ed was like looking at both sides of the coin at the same time. So he would be gruff and he would be kind, you know. He could be a sledgehammer and a kid glove both at the same time. He'd love to play that character. You probably were on the receiving end of that yourself.
Yes, when he, I wanted to pose for a picture with him and he insisted that I sit on his lap and then told me I had a bony ass.
that sounds just like you. That's wonderful.
I'm so glad, though, because I want to talk about a part of Ed's career that maybe a lot of people are not aware of, and that's the stage work he did. And we had Mark Harris on our show a few months back talking about his wonderful book on Mike Nichols, and it was so interesting to me to learn in that Mike had directed Ed when they were both in the middle of that Chicago theater scene.
Yeah, that goes back. That really is where both Mike Nichols and Elaine May and Ed Asner, Barbara Harris, that's where they first discovered their acting chops. Ed went to the University of Chicago in the late 40s and then into the early 50s and wasn't interested, actually, in acting. It wasn't on his plate. It wasn't on his, you know, his possibilities. And he got involved in that theater group, and it just clicked for him. And it was, you know, you just heard those names. That was a powerful group of people to figure out that, hey, I'm an actor too.
And for so many people who would then go on to work in television, the stage was such a great training ground because the discipline is so great. And I don't want to say that it makes television acting easy, but when you've had to memorize an entire script for a two-hour stage play, that's a little different skill set than just learning your lines to shoot a sitcom.
You know, Ed told me that he thought it was really Gavin McLeod told me this, who played Murray Slaughter on Mary Tyler Moore. He found it really interesting that when you looked at the core cast of that show, most of them came from theater background.
Right. Valerie Harper also had an improv background.
Yeah, absolutely. And he said he thinks it makes, I asked him if it made a difference. He said he thinks it makes a fundamental difference just in terms of the discipline you bring to it, the sense of, you know, a narrative from beginning to middle to end, as opposed to kind of a disjointed thing. I think he's right, too. Look at that ensemble. Look at the way they work together.
Well, and we had the chance to talk with Gavin last summer. We were doing a special on the 50th anniversary of the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and what a wonderful and sweet man he was.
Oh, very warm, very wonderful. Loves talking about those days, too.
So,
you know,
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
Just one thing. In terms of the connection of Gavin and Ed, it's just moving to me even think about it. I was with Ed in mid-May. Mm. I was finally able to fly out there and just sit with him. And the second day I was there, I walked in and he said, Gavin's gone into hospice.
Oh.
And he said, that leaves me, Betty White, and John Amos. Mm. And at the end of our conversation, this was my last day there, and I was about to go, and we talked a lot about Gavin. It was very much on his mind. And so I thought of that when I heard of Ed's death then, too.
Well, and it was that incredibly poignant tweet that he sent out after Gavin passed away that was, I'll paraphrase, but it was along the way of, I'll see y'all soon.
Yeah. He did that after Valerie died, too. I think he said something along the lines of, good night, beauty, I'll see you soon.
Yeah. We're talking.
He was a guest for a class I was teaching on Chicago theater history, and he guested there. And it must have been really on his mind because the first thing he said in front of this group of my students was he had just lost one of his dogs, and he said, but I'll be joining him soon.
Mm.
You know, so there, right there, there's three examples of that. Isn't it intriguing?
It is indeed. We're talking with Mark Larson. He's working on a biography of Ed Asner. He had some struggles there in making that breakthrough into television and film. There were a lot of small roles and character parts playing the heavy for a lot of years before the Mary Tyler Moore Show came along. Did he ever think along the way about maybe giving up, that it wasn't going to work, or at least going back and doing stage work full time?
He did quite a bit, but you're right. They were all small roles. There are all those shows like, you know, The Fugitive, and he did some small roles in movies, too, during that time. He was on Broadway in New York, a small part, but with Jack Lemmon during that time. I never got the sense from him that he thought, hey, I better give it up, you know? It's really what he wanted to do. I had asked him early on, too, if he thought there was some sort of belief system or some sort of theme that ran throughout his life and career. And he said, God, I have no idea that way. And then he said, what do you think? And I said, persistence. And he said, damn it, you nailed it.
I can hear him saying that. That's absolutely wonderful. Well, there's so many great stories about his work on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and we had our mutual friend Treva Silverman on last week sharing some of those stories. But I love his audition and the fact that he came in and he wasn't happy about it. Instead of walking away, well, he showed that persistence you spoke of.
Treva told you the story, or did Ed, or both?
I think Ed told us the story, yeah.
Yeah. That's a pretty pivotal moment. He told me he went straight to the door, turned back, and said he wanted to do it over, because it was just awful. It must have been awful. Did he tell you, too, that Gavin was supposed to play Lou Grant?
And Gavin told us that, too, and yeah. Gavin said, he had worked on the Dick Van Dyke Show with Mary, and he said, I can't be Mary's boss. I can't see myself doing that. And he thought that, and he knew Ed. He thought Ed would be better, and he really wanted to play the part of Murray. And they said, well, you know, it's a smaller part. And he said, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And when I sat with Ed, and that last day, as we sat at his kitchen table, and we talked about Gavin, he said something I thought was really poignant. He said, you know that Gavin was supposed to play Lou Grant. And I said, yeah, he told me. And he said, can you imagine how different things would have been for Gavin, the show, and for me if that had happened?
Mm. That really makes you think a little bit there. I also want to talk about the work that was very important to him and to a lot of actors, and that's his work as the president of the Screen Actors Guild. He came along at an important time in the union's history, and that's, to me, as big a part of his legacy as the incredible acting work.
Yeah, it very much was. He served for two terms, too, and it was a pretty volatile time, you know. And he's not one, as you probably well know, he's not one to shy away from controversy. And he got embroiled in quite a bit.
Well, and then more controversy as well when he was doing the spinoff from Mary Tyler Moore, Lou Grant, and was critical of the U.S. policy in regard to El Salvador. And he said right to the end that probably resulted in the series ending prematurely because they were still in the top 10 in the ratings.
Yeah. They were doing well. It was very critically acclaimed. CBS to this day maintains that it was because of ratings. Ed to this day, well, until his death, believed it was a political thing. I'm still trying to tease that out. I mean, it's a tough thing to kind of figure out. But it was an abrupt cancellation. I've talked to some of the other cast members, and it came kind of abruptly and caught people by surprise. One of them told me it was like a broadside. It just they didn't see it coming. And then after that, of course, Ed's literally getting death threats. The sponsors were pulling out. You know, so it was a very tough time. Ed told me too that the producers tried to get him to tone it down a little bit, and he just couldn't. He just couldn't. It's what he believed in.
Right. He had such a prolific late career run of films and television shows, doing his one-man show at stages all over the country from big cities to, well, towns like Bangor, Maine. Well, what drove that? He obviously seemed to still love the work, but what was it that kept him so busy literally right till the end?
He just could not work. He had to work. And I put that question, as you did to me, to a lot of the people that he worked with. One of them was Susan Lohenberg from L.A. Theater Works. And she said he just was really good at what he did, and he wanted to do it. And he would take roles that didn't pay that much. He just really loved to work. And I think he wanted to be around people. Part of it's, you know, to keep making some money. But I don't know if you know this, but he was scheduled to be in a two-man show with Jamie Farr this past weekend.
I did know that. I saw that somewhere on social media.
Yeah. Yeah, they were supposed to do it, and they just were recently rehearsing it.
Well, and we had scheduled him to come here to do his play God Help Us last year, just as the pandemic hit, so we postponed, and I had just communicated with his daughter Liza a few weeks before he passed, and we were talking about seeing if we could reschedule at some point later in the year. So he was planning into 2022.
Oh, very much so. And he a month before he died, maybe five weeks before he died, he was in, where was he? Montana, doing God Help Us. You know, I mean, there was every assumption that he's going to keep going.
Well, yeah, he seemed, I think I said it on the air, it seemed to me, even though it made no sense, that Ed was a guy who would never die.
Yeah. You know, here's a story I like to tell because I think it epitomizes him. When we were doing Zoom calls, at one point, all of a sudden, he kind of lurched forward, and his face was very close to the lens, if you can picture that. And he was sort of groaned. I said, "What's the matter?" And he goes, "Damn it, my left ass cheek hurts. I fell on it the other day." And I've been able to discern that he was kind of uncomfortable anyway. And I said, "Look, let's reschedule with it. You know, we don't need to finish up today." And he goes, "No, keep going. I want to keep going." And I think that's him. And I heard so many stories from others where something would happen, and then he would just want to get right back to work.
Now, no one has done a biography of Ed. How important was it to him for you to tell his story and for it to be told the right way?
You know, I don't know how I would discern that, except that he was fully engaged in it. I had many, many conversations with him. He was always at the ready to do it, to have these conversations. And he told me early on, "Ask me anything." And we would talk a long time. So I take that as an indication that it was important to him.
So do you have a timeline, Mark, as to when the book may come out?
Not yet. We're still, you know, I'm still in the process of, I'm sorry, somebody's calling me. I apologize for that.
Quite all right.
I don't yet. I'm still at the stage of gathering the material, you know. I have several chapters all set to go, but this is still fairly early. I'm still lining up interviews.
So as you've done your research, whether it's from Ed or talking with those who knew him, is there one big surprise that stands out to you, something you didn't expect from the Ed Asner story?
Wow. That's a great question, Rich. I think one of the things that's taken me aback is that incredible drive that, you know, over decades, and the fact that he is beloved across generations. And you just see that over and over and over again. Paul Rudd, who he co-starred with on Broadway in a play called Grace in 2012, said, this is a guy that has appealed to all, you know, every generation so far. And that can't be said about too many people. And when I think about it, that is rare, you know. He's found a niche at each stage of his career. And the other thing is, I don't know that I, from my previous interviews with him, fully grasped the love out there for this man. My God.
Yeah.
You've probably seen all the press that's come out. In this time of all these things going on in the world, it got a tremendous amount of press. And then my own Facebook page is just full of people reminiscing about him. And it continues.
Well, he was
took me by surprise.
A remarkable talent and a remarkable person as well. Mark, we appreciate you coming on to talk about your work with Ed and your knowledge of him and his life. And we look forward to the book and hope you'll come back with us when the book is out and talk more about Ed.
I'd love to do that. I appreciate the invitation very much.
Great. Thank you for being with us, Mark. We wish you well.
You too, Rich. Bye, Mike.
That is Mark Larson, again, working on a biography of Ed Asner.